high time now for our tune of the week.
Come on, let's go.
This is the Media Industry Guru Show, the show that exposes you to entertainment, music, film, TV, and tech.
We're online 24/7. 24/7.
You're listening to the hottest internet station.
Hey, Courtney, welcome to the Media Industry Guru Podcast. Very excited to have you on and looking forward to hearing more about your adventures within the music and entertainment industry.
Hi, Forbes. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So to get started, I noticed that you played clarinet growing up with your dad and you played music. Were you guys in a band or what made you explore being a musician?
So I didn't always play with my dad, but on clarinet at least he taught me guitar when I was little, and I learned keyboard, so sometimes we would just like play around when he was playing guitar, but I played clarinet just in school growing up. And I grew up, you know, driving around with my dad when I was little. I'm from a very small Louisiana town, and so that's what you do there. And he would just play all of these, you know, old, mostly country songs, some classic rock. And then we'd go back home and he would play the guitar and pull out those same songs. And
nice.
I was like, wow, this is what I like to do. I like to be around music and I want to be more involved. And I just started learning instruments and never stopped.
And then how did you segue from being on the musician side to being on the business side? What made you switch gears?
College. I started as a music education major, and I was learning even more instruments, and it was a lot of hours, and I liked it, but I was not a performer. That was not meant for me. And so I was like, well, I could always do the, you know, business side of it. I don't really want to do education anymore. And so I switched my degree from music to business. And after going for a couple of years, I started taking some like law classes, and I was like, maybe this is the direction I'll go. So I never like, I always knew I wanted to stay in music. I just never was sure what I wanted to do with it until I got here, really.
Got it. Okay. And tell us about those steps from going from like business and having that acumen to shifting gears into law school and learning about the ropes of like music industry law and copyright.
Sure. Yeah. So I started in business. It was about 2.5 years to finish up my business degree. And I took 3 or 4 non-music related law classes. And I just decided that I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So I was going to try law school, which I don't recommend. make sure you want to go to law school before you do. But I knew that they had entertainment law, because my dad knew people who did it. And so I was just like, you know, maybe that's what I want to do. I want to, you know, help protect these people in some way and make sure their, you know, their rights are secure and all this different stuff. And I didn't understand what that meant at the time. So I went to law school and learned that law school does not let you take entertainment classes the first like 2 years. And so then I'm just taking all these random law classes that, I mean, they're, you know, they're important, I guess. Contracts and everything is very important for music. So I did those and I kind of did my own research a lot of the time while I was at law school. I actually did my law school, I call it my law school thesis. It's not quite the same thing as a master's thesis, but it's just as long. and I did it on the royalty rates for streaming because it was,
okay.
Yeah, it was a year before the MMA actually was in, or maybe 2 years before the MMA was enacted. And so people were really talking about it. And I just happened to meet this woman, Deborah Evans, who has her own publishing house in New Orleans. And a lot of Loyola students had interned with her. And so I was like, well, I'd love to intern. She's like, I can't pay you. I was like, that's fine. I'm not a problem. I need to learn. And this is the only way I know how. And so I ended up staying on and interning with her for 2 years. I did this big massive research project on streaming, and then I decided my last year that I wasn't going to get the proper training in New Orleans for entertainment law just because it wasn't as available there. And so for my last semester I moved to New York almost and did I did my last semester at Cardozo, which is one of the top IP law schools. Mm-hmm. And so I, in that last, you know, semester I was there, I just took like a ton of IP classes. I did everything from copyright to patent law, trademark law. I did computer law. I did even design law. Like I just threw myself into the world of intellectual property and spent that 6 months starting to study for the bar and taking all those classes. And then I got in with an attorney here who also did some of that. And so he trained me a lot on trademark and copyright and stuff like that. So it was definitely a journey. That was a good word to use for it.
Yeah. Then post law, like passing the bar, getting the JD, what was kind of like your first music industry experience and how did that tie to studying law?
Yeah. So while I worked for this attorney, he represented a couple of clients that were like local bands and stuff. And so I worked on trademarks for them and some like agreements, not a lot of copyright stuff, which is where I ended up. But I wasn't done being like in the music industry. And so I started going to AIMP meetings. I don't know if you're familiar. It's the Association of Independent Music Publishers. And I would go to like luncheons and meetings, any of them that I could find that were free. Because it's not cheap to be here.
So
I would go to all the free events and I just started talking to people. And I just happened to meet a girl that I now still work with who was also from the South and she was around my age and we kept talking and she was like, well, my company, you know, is great, but they're not hiring yet. And so I was like, okay, no problem. Let's just stay in touch. And so, you know, every few months we'd meet up and finally one day I met up with her and she's like, hey, my company's hiring now. If you want to apply. And I was like, absolutely. I need to get somehow in the music industry and out of just straight law. And I applied and my old boss knows my new boss. And so it was a lot of, you know, talking to the right people, networking.
Sure.
And now I've been here for four and a half years at this company and I've gone from everything from royalties to copyright to A&R and all the industry stuff.
And can you elaborate on the company and what its mission vision is, what major highlights you've accomplished thus far working those 4 years at TRO Exit's music group?
Sure. So I obviously I don't speak for the company, but I've been with the company a while, so I can kind of talk about some of my focuses there. We've always been a company that really focuses on helping kind of I'd say the underdog, but we do have some major players in the industry as well. But our company started, we have our 75th anniversary next year. So it started in New York to help folk artists, essentially. The guy who started it was Howie Richman, and he's an inspiration to all of us. But he also started Songwriters Hall of Fame here in New York. And our earliest clients were all the folk clients of, you know, Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Oscar Brand. And so we started on that idea, and we've kind of started modernizing that a bit since I've been there. I wouldn't say like I was the impetus in any means, but I've been a lot of the forefront lately in it. So royalties are royalties. I won't say I did a massive amount there, but I did, you know, I learned a lot there about how the industry works on the accounting side. But it was really when I got into copyright and started working with new artists. We've signed just over 21 new artists in the past year. And we are very particular about it. We want to maintain the integrity of our company. And so what we do is we focus on, you know, what is your genre? What do you write about? We have to make sure the songwriting is there because first and foremost, we're a publisher. But I was really kind of one of the first people that got into the reigniting the A&R in our department and in our office. And so it's me and then one other guy who works with me, and we're just constantly, you know, meeting artists and talking to them and hearing their stories and making sure that the people that, you know, they work hard, it's not like nothing, you know? So that's kind of our focus, is to kind of go back to our roots and make sure that even though we've become a bigger player now, I mean, we're still one of the biggest indies that's remained indie this whole time. We don't never sold to another company or anything. It's still owned by the Richman family. We just want to make sure that kind of the songwriting comes first and those people are getting the recognition they deserve and the help that they need when they don't, you know, may not know anyone in the industry to help them. So
no, this is really some great insight, and especially from the A&R lens, it's definitely evolved, and I feel like we've seen a constant change in the way A&R representatives scout out talent. And I just want you to highlight some points on like working in that landscape, especially from a law perspective, how it's changed in your day to day. I'm assuming like technology, like it's not just going to like a venue and scouting out talent anymore, like back like 3-4, maybe even 4 decades ago.
Yeah. So I won't say I'm an A&R expert, but I have been doing it about 1.5 years now. So I've got some insight. But yeah, no, it's definitely changed. I've been in the music industry for 6 or 8 years now. And I know when I was working with the first publisher, we did go to, you know, we would still go to shows to find people when she was looking for songwriters. It was around the time that like Tank and the Bangas were coming up. If you're familiar with them. And
great
band. So we went to a lot of their shows and stuff to like kind of chat with them, and she ended up missing out on them, but it was a close call. And so now it still has that element, but it's more. There's just so many avenues. And this is something we're constantly talking about at my office as well, is, you know, of course there's Spotify, there's TikTok, there's, you know, all of these social media platforms that people are getting discovered on. And so we have to pay attention to those platforms. And one of the guys I work with does put together this really great schedule. He goes through and he tries to find like emerging artists, and then we have to do like a deep dive research on them and be like, are they working with someone? Do they seem interested? Like, do they own their works? Like, and from the, obviously from the legal standpoint, that's my biggest thing is like, what paperwork do I need you to give me so I feel comfortable that you own everything you've told me you own? And so that's of course, one big element of it is, you know, that kind of research and finding them online. And then I still do go to a lot of shows. I was just at the Northeastern Regional Folk Alliance this past weekend, and I probably watched 50 or more performances because it's like 10 a.m. to 3 a.m. and after 6 p.m. it's all shows, and you're just popping around from room to room. So it's still a major part of what we do. It's just not, I don't know if I'd say it's the biggest or not, but it is part of it still for sure. Going to these shows, and then of course when our artists are in town, we want to go to their shows to help support them. And then if they're playing with someone, I always scout it out. We our office represents a lot of different folk artists, of course, and so I was just at a show Tuesday night at Rockwood, and the opener for one of our performers sang a lot of like Joni Mitchell works. And so I like emailed like our UK office. I was like, hey, maybe we should check her out and see how she's doing. And like, so it's just kind of an always on my mind, no matter what I'm doing, whether it's listening to music, whether I'm at a show, whether I'm at a music event, talking to people. I think it's really important to build those relationships, especially if you're signing all these people that you have to make sure that they do own their works and they do have everything they say they do. And of course we've got other avenues. I don't know if you're familiar with like Taxi or Song Submit. And then we have a form on our website. People can fill out if they're interested. So it's a lot of different avenues we look at, but it's definitely changed and become a lot more online.
Yeah, it's definitely evolved, as I've seen like, do different publishing companies and how they have like now divisions. It's not just the record labels that do A&R. There's other licensing companies that do A&R. There's content creation and management companies that do it. So it's like becoming a lot more robust and not just siloed to the labels that everybody initially associates it with.
Yeah. And like as a publisher, we've done A&R in the past. Before my time, we did it in the past. And we would still, you know, a lot of it was if we ended up at a show, but we were looking to find people to like cover our works or whatever. So like if we had like a writer that people didn't really know about, we try to find a bigger player in the field that would record it. And so that was a lot of the A&R side. And then of course signing new songwriters if we happened upon them at the right time, the right place. But yeah, it's much more we do it much more purposefully now, I guess. So
what would you say has been one of the most exciting projects you've worked on, or like rewarding parts of your day-to-day job? And then what have been some of the challenges that you face being on the law side, having that acumen?
Yeah, I mean, the most exciting parts for me is building relationships with these musicians. I feel like that's kind of a bad answer, but it's my favorite part. I can, you know, listen to music all day and it's mm-hmm. great, but I've been listening to music all day my whole life. Like, that's nothing new. And then I have meetings with them and it's nice to talk to them. But when I get to actually go like sit down and like have coffee with them or like have lunch with mm-hmm. them, like that's one thing specifically about working at TRO is because we are, you know, independent still, we really yeah. talk about how like we give the personal touch. So you're okay. not just behind a screen. A lot of I've recently heard, which surprised me probably more than it should have, that there are people that sign like admin agreements or like sync deals and they like have never seen this person's face. It's just like they're sent a contract and they sign it. And that oh, wow. blows my mind. I don't know that I'll ever be that person. I will always need to like have a conversation with you.
Sure.
But like this weekend at NERFA, like I was able to, we had five of our artists there and I was able to sit down with each one and like have dinner with them and just kind of like not mm-hmm. only get to know them, but get to know like, you know, their goals for their music. Cause that also helps us know like, oh, you really want to like switch gears a bit, or you're really mm-hmm. particular about like this one TV show type you want to be involved in. And so like, I can bring that back to the office and be like, hey, these are things they're really interested in. Mm. Maybe they want to co-write with another songwriter we represent. We can, you know, make that happen also.
For sure.
And so I like getting to know the people. I've always wanted to know people when I work with them.
No, I think developing that like personal and professional relationship with the artist is definitely important, because a lot of the times I've even interviewed artists and they don't have like the background in business, like the mm-hmm. kind of like the networking piece, or even like the deal piece, like, or management, they don't have that knowledge. So like you having that knowledge from even starting off, like your interest in music, playing clarinet, growing up with your dad doing that, to like the law side, and then having this robust knowledge about music from all different lenses, and then connecting it to the person that you're speaking with, the artist or client, is definitely beneficial.
And that is the big thing, is like songwriters, artists, they don't always know their rights. They don't always know like what their opportunities are or where they're missing out. And I'll say, it's not necessarily mine to promote, but Songwriters North America has been a great resource for songwriters. I've joined as a member, as a manager, but I tell all songwriters I know to also join it, because they do a lot of education in both publishing on the artist side too, if they can. I mean, it's for sure. songwriters, so it focuses mostly on publishing and making sure you're collecting royalties and knowing your rights and staying aware of what's happening with Congress with songwriter laws and stuff. But I've found that's a really good source, and I always try to like talk to people, and I make myself available, so I'm always happy to sit down and have a coffee with someone and explain as well as I can anything in the publishing world. But I'm only one person too, so it's good to have other resources.
Speaking of like additional resources, I think one of the most valuable ones can also be like a mentor mentee relationship. Did you have any of that during your law studies, or like post law, any mentorship that you really valued that like you took away? Any highlights that you can share, or insights?
Yes, absolutely. I would not be here today without my mentor. I will say that. Like, I would not be where I am in the industry. So Deborah Evans, who I mentioned from New Orleans, she runs Della Music Publishing. And she works really closely with Helene Blue Publishing as well, who's based here in New York. And Deborah is the one that I just interned with for every Friday for like 2 years. And she taught me essentially everything I needed to know about the music industry from a smaller level, because she's obviously an independent publisher. She runs everything like out of her house. Like, she's very small, but she's very mighty. She's like insanely educated in the clearance side of everything. And so she taught me a lot about clearance and licensing. And then her husband, Joe, runs all of their accounting side. And so he like showed me the accounting side of everything. And it was all hands-on, and I was just sitting across the table from her. And so anytime I had questions, she always was right there to answer them. And even after, she's the reason I moved to New York. She told me, she was like, I know that, you know, the options of Nashville, LA, and New York, if you're looking to like really be in the bigger side of the music industry. She was like, but you've got to move to New York. And I was like, okay, I've never been to New York. I was like, I don't know that I want to move there. And she was like, no, you have to move there. She's from Queens, so she's born and raised here. And so she's the reason I moved to New York. She's the one who told me to go to these AIMP meetings. She still takes a call anytime I have questions. She'll email me. And it's fun now that, like, I've been in the industry, like, with TRO for so long. Now we go to some of the same conferences, or I'll, like, be on a Zoom call for, like, the NMPA, and I'll like see her name pop up, and I'll just like shoot her a text and be like, it's so cool to like see you. And I just saw her at a conference in May, and she was like, it's really nice that we're like showing up to these things as like colleagues now. Like, it's always fun to see, like, she's kind of watched me grow in the industry. And I would definitely say most of it wouldn't have been possible without meeting her, for sure. So
no, it's definitely valuable, because they give you like the tools that equip you with not only your day job, but just like for like going through the ropes of like other professional opportunities down the road. So it's good to have that relationship. And then I guess, like, what tips or tricks could you give to somebody who aspires to be in your shoes, who wants to either go to law school, navigate the ropes of that, or just like work in your role in publishing and artist management and representation?
Network. That's it's sometimes exhausting, but it's the thing. I would say for law school specifically, go visit every law school you want to attend. They're all very different, and they all have different like priorities and vibes. Even I visited three before I settled on Loyola, but I visited LSU, and they had like offered me a free ride to law school. I would have to pay for like housing and stuff, but I went, and I was like, man, I hate this setting. Like, nothing against LSU, obviously I'm from Louisiana, but like, I got there, I was like, this is not for me. Everyone is so intense all the time. And I visited a school in North Carolina, and it was a little bit too out of my element, didn't really offer a lot of like opportunities. And then Loyola, I really liked it. I will say, maybe I would have searched a bit more for someone that did more in entertainment law, but I still really enjoyed my time there, and I built some really good connections and friendships there. And then for the music side, I'm telling you, any network event you can go to, there's Women in Music is a huge chapter. The SONA, Songwriters North America, is huge. AIMP, for this is all for the publishing side. Some artists as well. Just go and talk to people, and some people want to talk to you. Like, if I'm there and you can talk to me, I want to talk to you. Some people will look at you like they wish you hadn't walked in the door, like whether they know you or not. And so it is not always easy. I will tell you that work. It's not always fun. You may leave and feel worse than when you got there, but just meeting that like one person that you need, and
that's all
just,
it takes.
Just keeping going is what it is.
Yeah. The positive reinforcement is definitely important, especially when networking and not giving up and having that drive and hustle like you do. Great. Awesome. I guess any parting words, anything exciting coming up personally or professionally, anything else you'd like to add in terms of wisdom to segue our end of our episode?
You know, I don't know. I'm constantly working. I did start my own management firm earlier this year, and I've been working with a couple of clients that I adore. They're insanely talented and so smart and so driven. Caitlin Richards and Jacqueline Dima, they're both pretty local to New York. They've both been here most of their lives, if not all of it. And they do a little funk music, a little indie rock, different stuff like that. So I'm really excited about our next year. We've spent this year kind of building things up. And, you know, we had our first show at Rockwood. We've been getting into festivals, stuff like that. And I'm just really ready for it to be the end of the year to set up kind of our next year's plan and just keep driving it. So that's been probably the most fulfilling thing I've done this year, honestly, even though I've done a lot of things with TRO, and I love them. And we're doing some really fun projects for our 75th anniversary. But the personal touch is always what means the most to me. So being able to like work with them and help
the entrepreneurship side. Yeah, that's really cool. How you do both and have that acumen. And congratulations on all your achievements thus far at TRO, and then garnering those two clients within the New York music industry scene, and looking forward to seeing how your career evolves, especially within publishing, as you take on these clients as well.
Yeah, thank you so much. Again, thank you so much for having me. This has been really great.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Media Industry Guru podcast. Check out the Instagram at Media Industry Guru for all the details on the latest and coolest upcoming episodes that you will hear. Email at mediaindustrygurupodcast@gmail.com for any other interviews that you would like to hear, or if you would like to be on the air and give a little promo or talk about yourself, or just even chat with me, because you know I'm doing this, I'm invested in this. And tune in weekly, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Tuesdays on the Anchor app, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, Breaker, and many more streaming platforms. Thanks again for all of the support, and peace out, and let's rock and roll.